TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. Okay, go! Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets, a division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Half past the hour, we're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're halfway through the show, in fact. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mundell, joined in studio, as Drew would say, to my left by Ezra Ginsberg, and to my right, Michael Remus. Producer Tim doing the great job that he does.
It's been a great playoff so far. We've had upsets, we've had high-scoring games. It's fantastic. What more could you ask for? It's the best time of year.
Who needs the Drew clips when Ezra and I can just do impressions?
Keep your focus, Ezra. Keep your focus.
Drew's the best. We miss him. We'll see him in about, what, 6 days in Kentucky?
Yeah, we're heading to his wedding. We're doing a little road trip here. Remus will be filling in the host chair. Remus and Dave are going to be doing double duty.
It's the Remus regime next week.
The Remus regime. Because, of course, if we left people out on the story here, Ezra and I are going to be attending Drew's wedding in Kentucky. That's where Drew is today. Planning everything, getting everything sorted out, the centerpieces, the desserts.
Yep.
Probably more the desserts and the centerpieces.
Well, and the thing is, the desserts and the centerpieces, that's just for Drew himself. It's not like the guest. He's organizing his own meals and desserts for himself. He doesn't really care about his friends. He could care less about us.
You know, as mentioned on the show before, there will be no torts at the wedding. I hope you guys are okay with that.
Absolutely no torts.
I'm not talking about John Tortorella.
There's no banana torts. Yeah.
I'm actually not going to go to any more restaurants that have torts at all.
Just because you're so scared of
them. I'm anti-torts.
We asked before the break, and we talked about before the break, Brent Sutter, leading into the segment, of course, and he was relieved of his duties. Relieved, you know.
Yep.
They kind of decided to part ways.
Late Thursday night, Richie.
Yeah, late Thursday night, Brent Sutter. We had heard some rumblings that there was a disconnect in terms of management and coaching, and I think the bigger picture, we've been hearing a lot about the Calgary Flames ownership having a say in the team's day-to-day operations. You kind of feel, at least I feel personally, that Jay Feaster seems handcuffed by somebody there, and that what he wants to do is in probably direct contrast to what the ownership maybe, we're speculating here, wants him to do. The questions, of course, are going to come of this, whether or not it's time to trade Jerome Iginla, whether or not it's time to trade Mika Kiprusoff. We have a fair amount of time after the playoffs to discuss that, but let's talk now about the firing of Brent Sutter.
Right. And
was it warranted?
I don't know about that. I really like Brent Sutter, and you know we've talked about this before. He's the owner of the Red Deer Rebels, and before he took his first NHL head coaching job with the Devils, he was doing a good job in Red Deer.
He was,
and he's a tough as nails coach. He's an extremely intense guy. All the Sutter brothers are very good hockey minds. He had 3 years in Calgary to turn this thing around. And there was all types of problems. There was the issue with him and his brother and some of the moves that they made and some of the players that they were stuck with.
They didn't talk for a year.
They didn't talk for a year and didn't get along. Whether it's warranted or not, I'm not sure, Richie, because at the end of the day, he was the coach for 3 years and they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
They didn't take that next step. And the Calgary Flames weren't a bottom feeder. I mean, whenever you have Jerome Iginla, you're going to be a decent team. Yeah. But they never got into the playoffs. They never took the next step. Brent Sutter never seemed to get a lot out of some players. I mean, they brought back Olli Jokinen, and he actually played well this year.
George Johnson, an interesting point in the Calgary Herald. You know, his biggest issue with, and I think Sutter for overall did a fine job there because he didn't have much talent.
He had a winning record.
Yeah, he did, and they end up finishing outside the playoffs every year. And I thought that's the kind of team that they were. So they didn't maybe outperform expectations, but they didn't. You know, they didn't miss out on they didn't not perform to what they maybe were expected to. So he did a solid job, I think. But George mentioned the fact that maybe if the team had, you know, quote unquote overachieved up to the points of the crunch time coming down the stretch of the past couple seasons, they've collapsed, and that's on Brent Sutter. But his point was in the article in the Herald, and we'll link it over on Twitter soon. His point was, Michael, sure, that was an issue, but this can't be only one step, meaning Brent Sutter can't be seen as the problem in Calgary and that a new coach will fix it. There are many problems in Calgary, and this needs to be the first domino, because if it's not, it's more of the same, and the paying public is going to get the short end of the stick.
You know, the bottom line here is Jay Feaster just brought in GM, you know, fairly recently, and he did not hire Brent Sutter. And that's something you always see with GMs.
He came in first as the assistant general manager.
Came in as assistant GM. I remember he appeared on our show as assistant GM shortly after. And he's, you know, heading the change in Calgary. But he wants to find his guy, wants to mold his vision. And if you're saying that his vision is clashing with ownership's vision, then something's got to give there because it clearly is not going to work.
And, guys, we talked about it at the beginning of the year when we were doing our season preview. I mean, Calgary is, if not very close to a rebuilding situation,
they're 3 years behind it.
They're behind it. And Jerome McGinley's got 1 year left on his contract. And the whole debate about whether he should be traded, I mean, that's up to, you know, I mean, you'll get 10 different opinions on that.
I think there's no doubt about it.
That he will be traded?
No, I think
or that
some
he should
doubt.
Be traded.
He definitely should be traded.
Okay, so and I would probably agree with you, but I mean, we've been having this discussion for 2 years now. Yep. Should he be traded? He's wasting away a little bit. This is a team that doesn't have top talent to support him. But let's go under the assumption that he will be traded. Well, then you're not going to be a playoff team next year
rebuild.
If you trade Jerome McGinley. He's your best player.
Yeah.
Aside from maybe Kipper, but he's definitely your best forward.
You're going to go the Edmonton route.
So
you don't
have
much young talent aside from a couple guys and Sven Barchi being the number one guy, and they haven't drafted well. They've traded draft picks. The team is in an awful position, and it's going to take a couple more years. The problem is, if you're a Flames fan, the past 3 years should have been that couple more years, and now it's going to be. So it's going to be a six-year process as opposed to a three-year process. And as a fan, you know, that's easy to say. The patience is easy. Fans can understand it when you have a plan. Yeah, but they don't guarantee the money there like they do in Winnipeg. If you paid for the last 3 years, big thousands of dollars to see that team, and now you're going to have a rebuild, I'd be angry because I just wasted 3 years of my money.
And Richie, I don't know about if you share this opinion, but to me, what the plan was with Brent Sutter was, let's try to squeak into the playoffs and go on a run with what we've got.
And that's always a terrible plan because overall, you're not going to be able to do it. You're not going to be able to make that kind of Cinderella run that they made in 2004.
They've been trying to duplicate that
since then. Right. And players were younger, and they got lucky too. And Kiprasov played lights out. But I guess the one issue, there must be a disconnect there, Michael, because I think one thing that has been talked about at length is that Brent Sutter is known to be a pretty good coach of young players, whether it be in Red Deer, whether it be the World Junior Championships. And we're going to talk in a second about his new job that he got recently, right after being, you know, relieved from his duties in Calgary with Team Canada. But if he's known to be a good a coach for younger players,
this was a veteran team.
Then why not keep him around for the rebuild?
You know, I think his views with management on the direction they want to go, they obviously said that wasn't working. And sometimes when you disagree on something, that point is just so oppositely that you can't make it work. And obviously, maybe I don't know what their views were, but he didn't think that it was going correct, so he, you know, stood his own ground.
And Reem, you know, the Flames ownership and Jay Feaster have decided they're not going to bring Brent Sutter back. They're not going to bring Dave Lowry back, who's been around as an assistant coach for a long time now. And whether it's some of the names we're hearing, whether it's a Bob Hartley or Jacques Martin, you know, good coaches.
But Bob Hartley is known to be hard on younger players, though. I don't think he'd be the right guy.
He might not be the right guy for Calgary, but
he might be the right guy for Montreal.
The point being that whoever these other guys that are coming in, I don't know necessarily pound for pound, they're better coach than Brent Sutter. Brent Sutter's a very good coach.
Fair point.
To me, it's a character / personality clash.
Well, we have to also ask Yezzy whether or not Brent Sutter is willing to listen to other people. Sutter's known to be a little bit hard-headed.
Right.
I think that's something to consider. Brent Sutter also, let's talk about that now, was hired to be Team Canada's coach. Let's talk about it from the perspective of Team Canada and from the perspective of Brent Sutter. To me, it's a no-brainer. You take the gig. You obviously, this is an indication to me that he wants to be involved in NHL coaching.
Mm-hmm.
He gets hired by, you know, and there were some rumblings, and there are still some rumblings. You know, Eric Francis said this on the Hot Stove months ago. Tom Rennie is sitting there in Edmonton, hanging by a thread because Steve Tambellini has once again indicated that he doesn't really seem to know what he's doing as GM of the Edmonton Oilers. You know, at least in terms of a classy manner. This happened with Pat Quinn before. Tom Rennie's sitting there. You have to wonder if Brent Sutter makes the drive up, to Edmonton to coach that young team. That's something to ponder. That was mentioned before. Who knows if it's true? Who knows if it's substantiated? I think Francis was saying it in terms of speculation, but it's something that needs to be talked about. But back to him being named coach of the Canadian team. That's a pretty solid coaching group. You got Brent Sutter, Guy Boucher, and Kirk Muller.
Yep.
Kirk Muller and Guy Boucher are two of the young, good, nice, creative minds in the NHL. I think that's a nice coaching group moving into the Worlds.
Yeah, and Oilers... Is he a consultant now or advisor, assistant general manager, whatever you want to call him? Kevin Lowe is the general manager of Canada.
Good point
obviously
as well.
Former general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. But he's assembled a fantastic coaching group here. Obviously, Evander Kane and Andrew Ladd were announced that they're going to
be... the Winnipeg perspective.
They're going to be playing for Team Canada. This looks... The coaching staff that they're bringing is top-notch. These are all guys that have had a lot of success. Brent Sutter at the... junior level, obviously, with Team Canada. I thought he did a good job in New Jersey there for a couple of years. Obviously, Guy Boucher is one of the bright young coaches coming up.
Yeah.
And Kirk Muller, you know, actually did a fine job towards the end of the season with the Hurricanes and all the years with Montreal.
Yeah.
So it is good. And, you know, on that angle, I think when there's a guy like Brent Sutter who does a pretty good job in Calgary, I don't think he's going to be waiting that long. And Edmonton... You know, you might be onto something there, Richie.
Well, I mean, that was just Eric Francis said that, so I'm not going to. That's just based on reports.
Eric Francis might be onto something.
Yeah, we have Ben Kuzma coming up after the break. But quickly, I want to talk about this. Ben's got a short amount of time. He's going to join us. He's traveling to Los Angeles. But quickly, Ed Tate wrote in the Free Press today about Andrei Pavlik. I think there was a little bit of lost in translation there.
Czech Republic was a little bit upset with him, right?
The Czech Republic. There was a quote here that was from one of the biggest papers in the Czech Republic. That said, I really wish, from the coach of the Czech Republic world team, I really wish that Pavlik came because he is a cornerstone on which we build a national team. He's a young, great goalie. And it seems absurd to me because Winnipeg is not in the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's a young man who helped us in last year's playoffs. Ask what he said to Pavlik, Ed wrote. The coach is quoted as saying that he cannot go against the wishes of the club. So the club, the Jets are saying that they were fine with him going and that he said he was too tired to go. I believe that's what he says at the beginning of the article. That he said he was too tired to go. And then now the Czech coach is saying that the Jets weren't allowing him. So there's a little bit of a controversy there with respect to Winnipeg, but I'm sure that'll get hashed out fairly soon.
Is Dominik Hasek not available?
Yeah, Dominik Hasek. I think isn't he still playing in like a Division 5 league?
I don't know. I know Ziggy Palfy's still playing.
Ziggy Palfy's still playing.
He's Slovak, but I think he is
Slovak.
They've got a score. The Czech Republic.
That's right. They got a score, that's all. Pulled Bob Cole in the 1998 Nagano Olympics. Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province. After the break, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Forty-five minutes past the hour, back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and producer Tim.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
There have been a few surprises so far in the first round of the National Hockey League playoffs, but I don't think there's any bigger surprise than the fact that the Vancouver Canucks are down 0-2 heading down the coast to Los Angeles, and we're joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province to talk about it. Ben, how are you?
Well, the best thing that came out of last night was no riot in the streets. It was a Friday the 13th and a pretty surly crowd and a bit of an ugly mood in the rink last night. But I think everybody just exited the premises and probably drank their sorrows down the old tube last night. So, Kings full marks. I mean, to their credit, the Canucks were probably the better team 5-on-5, but you can't give up two shorthanded goals and a power play marker in what is a specialty team's game at this time of year and expect to win. And on top of that, Jonathan Quick is, again, becoming a story in this series and certainly looking like a bona fide Vezina Trophy candidate.
Yeah, he most assuredly is. Ben, you know, I guess take out Sedin out of the equation for a second. Heading into the first game of the series, assuming, you know, that people knew there wasn't a Daniel Sedin, that you know there knew Daniel Sedin wasn't going to be playing the first two games, how surprised are you by the fact that the Canucks are down 0-2?
Well, I expected the bounce back game last night. I'm sure they expected the same in Pittsburgh last night, too. It, you know, without Daniel Sedin, the Canucks were 8-1 down the stretch in the last nine games that Daniel Sedin missed. And he's not traveling with the team, by the way, to L.A., so this he's definitely had a setback. I think what surprises me is that maybe the Canucks to a man didn't realize that, you know, that's fine to have that kind of a run in the regular season, but this is a different animal. Yeah. Maybe the lack of urgency in their game the last 6 weeks, the fact that they had a pretty high playoff seed wrapped up, at least number two, may have played into this. The Kings have been playing playoff hockey for about 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever. I just thought from the get-go in game one when they gave up three scoring chances in the first 58 seconds spoke to an inability to handle the Kings' very strong two-man forecheck. Their tenaciousness on the puck, there always seems to be two Kings around the puck. Yeah. And I think the Canucks have had a hard time adjusting to it. I like what they did last night in getting their defensive pairings back to what they should be with Keith Ballard coming back into the lineup. And I didn't mind Maxime Lapierre on the first line with Daniel out. But having said that, the end result is they're down 2-0. And now they're looking for a lot of answers. If they drop game three, I mean, I already think they're in too deep a hole. I can't imagine what's going to happen Sunday if they come out in the short end.
Ben, based on what we heard this morning on Twitter and, you know, on the internet, Daniel Sedin, it looks like he's not coming back in the first round. If Vancouver's able to win the series, is it a possibility that he'll come back for the second round?
You know, that's a distinct possibility. I think what happened here is, you know, a week ago Monday, Daniel participated in a full practice with the Canucks, full-on practice, and you're talking 60 minutes of high tempo, get your heart rate up to a high rate, guys are buzzing by you for a full 60 minutes. Now, anybody who's had a concussion will tell you that's a lot different than working out in the gym and slowly getting your game back. What occurred was, it wasn't so much after the practice, but overnight, next morning, he was complaining of some headaches. And what happened on the Tuesday, he didn't skate with the main group in advance of game one, but he skated in the afternoon with the Black Aces. So there's still some conjecture that, okay, well, hang on here. If he hasn't had a setback and he's skating with the extras, maybe he's a possibility. I think what that really said was he's trying to, you know, gear himself back and find another starting point in terms of getting a game going. He's taken a couple twirls by himself. But the fact he's not traveling with the team tells me that, you know, when you have post-concussion syndrome, there's a bit of head pressure, and flying at 38,000 feet doesn't help it. And really, a guy who hasn't played since March 21st, who's still having some symptoms, there's a protocol in place where if he did have a setback, he's supposed to be out of the lineup for a week, but we know that's pretty hilarious in the playoffs. So it's not that surprising to me that he's not available.
Vancouver hasn't had much success in that corner. I think it's Mike. Ben, I think we have a mic issue here. Ben, a lot of the Canucks struggles on the power play are being attributed to the lack of Daniel Sedin. Do you think that's the main reason for it? And if not, who else do you think is bearing the primary responsibility for those struggles?
Well, the power play has been in the toilet ever since the January 7th game in Boston, where they exploded for four power play goals and actually killed off seven power play chances for the Bruins and what was kind of WW3 there on that night. But since then, they only scored 17 power play goals the rest of the year. They are in all kinds of funks down the stretch. You know, what comes to mind, 2-for-27, and then they scored two in their final regular season game. But it was in the toilet long before Daniel got hurt by Duncan Keith. So I think the guy who's under a lot of pressure here is their special teams coach. Newell Brown was heralded as maybe an NHL head coaching candidate because he had given the Canucks what basically was a top-ranked power play the last 2 years. But to me, it's a lot of puck movement. They're doing all kinds of odd things. You see these drop passes through the neutral zone and very predictable in the ball. Not a lot of movement, a lot of stagnant play, looking for that perfect pass. Pretty easy to defend when you're as aggressive on the PK as the Kings are. And the Canucks were hard-pressed. I mean, they had one power play with one shot last night. They had one with none. Very predictable. So I think that I'd love to be a fly on the wall in those power play meetings before they play Sunday, because they better do something there, because like I said earlier, if you can't score in the power play, you're not going to win. You're just not going to win a playoff series.
Joined by Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ben, you came on the show just after the deadline, after the Canucks had made some significant moves, and you voiced some concern about the team's lack of scoring and giving up a scoring talent such as Cody Hodgson, obviously for both now and the future. That analysis seems to have been right on. Are the Canucks, do you think, having some regrets right now about those moves?
Well, they thought they had enough there. They said, again, what they did down the stretch, they thought that what they needed, if they were going to go the distance, was a stronger defensive posture. And getting Sammy Paulson, to be their third-line center, that responsible guy who's got an NHL playoff pedigree. But, you know, let's not kid ourselves. He's 34 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, he's been pretty good the last half dozen games now that he's more familiar with the system, and the third line has probably been their best line the last couple of weeks. But having said that, like you said, you give up Cody Hudson, and what you're really missing is somebody on the second power play unit who could get things going. I mean, they played Andrew Ebbett on the second power play unit last night because they didn't really have a lot of options, and they're not generating anything. The funny thing about Cody is as he's got this funny quick release snapshot, mm-hmm. but the one thing I always noticed about him was he was really good at threading passes through skates and legs and putting it right on the tape. And with everybody collapsing down low, you really need a guy who can do that. I mean, Henrik tries to do it on the first unit, but he just can't find a finisher. And, you know, there's a penchant when you're struggling that much for, say, a Ryan Kessler will grab the puck and try to do it all himself. I mean, it's fun to watch, but the end result isn't there.
And Roberto Luongo has been pretty solid in the first two games. You know, the third goal yesterday that Jarrett Stoll scored was a little bit weak, let's just put it that way. But do you think there's any chance that Corey Schneider plays Game 3? Should fans expect the possibility that Corey Schneider is going to play Game 3?
Well, if you're Alain Vigneault, you know, what do you think? I mean, you're right. I wouldn't hang any of those losses on Roberto Luongo. Game 1 would have been 6-1 if it wasn't for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, there was a crease scramble there and on the Stoll goal, and then there was a wraparound by Lewis that was probably a little more at fault. But, you know, we held him in there. And the funny thing is, you know, nobody in Vancouver is talking about the goaltending today. The only thing they're talking about is that maybe you need to throw the Kings a curveball and just change it up for the sake of changing it up. I expect Corey Schneider to play Sunday.
Wow.
Hasn't been announced, but I just think a guy who plays well on the road, by the way, and the team plays very well in front of Corey. I just think at this point in time, you need to do something.
Yeah.
If your power play is not going, I mean, again, to the Canucks' credit, they're playing well 5-on-5. It's 48 shots last night.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're not generating anything. I would, if I was a coach, I'd play Schneider on Sunday.
You know, with the Kings down 2-0, how would you rate Alain Vigneault's coaching job so far?
Oh, I think it's okay. I mean, he's doing what he has to do. Again, if they were getting beaten up 5-on-5, I'd say, you know, what's going on here? You got the wrong matchups up there. You know, like he had Kessler up against Kopitar last night, then he would switch and put him against Richards. And, you know, Kessler relishes those matchups. So if they were getting beaten up 5-on-5, I'd say, whoa, you know, he's getting out-coached here by Daryl Sutter because he's got the wrong matchups mm-hmm. up there. What I will say about Daryl Sutter is that he has a way of pushing the right buttons. He doesn't let his teams get satisfied. He's pretty hard on the Kings down the stretch, even though they made the playoffs. He didn't want them to have that, you know, sense of satisfaction. So whether it's Jonathan Quick or Anze Kopitar or Mike Richards, he's been hard on them. And he doesn't want them to get fat and sassy. And I think you can see the trickle-down effect here. The Kings have come here to Vancouver, and quite frankly, they weren't, you know, content with the split. I mean, they played just as hard last night. So this is a real mountain for the Canucks to climb. And you know, I had said at the outset that we were talking about possible playoff matchups, and this is the one that feared me. Feared me in the sense that you probably have a Vezina Trophy candidate in goal. You got the second-ranked defense. And it wasn't so much about the offense, because those goals will come. But the way that the Kings defend and the way that they can win those low-scoring games, you just don't want to play those teams in the playoffs.
Ben, we know you're off to L.A. You're going to grab a cab soon. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated. Your insight's always appreciated here on our show.
Yeah, he's right outside my door. Thanks, guys. Anytime. Stay in touch.
Thanks, Ben. Enjoy
Thanks,
game
ben.
Three.
Vancouver, down 0-2, heading to L.A. I don't think anybody would have predicted that. And they have a mountain to climb. And if you just joined us, no Daniel Sedin, apparently, for the remainder of the first round. We know for a fact he's not taking the trip to L.A. As Ben just mentioned, they're a little bit concerned about the pressure at 38,000 feet. And when you have a concussion, there's some serious issues. We talked about Vancouver, L.A. We got the Penguins' perspective from the Pittsburgh-Philly matchup. On the other side of the break, we're going to be joined by Sam Carcitti of the Philadelphia Inquirer to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. Up 2-0, back at home, waiting for Pittsburgh tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290. Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Richard Pollock filling in for the vacationing, soon-to-be wed Drew Mandel. Joined in studio by Michael Remus, Ezra Ginsberg, and producer Tim. We have not stopped talking, obviously, about the Pittsburgh-Philadelphia series, and now we're going to get the Philly perspective.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
On the line, we have Sam Carcitti of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Sam, how you been?
Good. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Can we say one thing? We certainly cannot get enough of this series. And as you wrote in your blog post this morning on the Philadelphia Inquirer, the catchphrase, "I don't believe what I just saw," has been applicable so far to the series from the late Jack Buck. How fitting is that description so far?
Yeah, it's been incredible. I mean, the Flyers down 3-0 in game one and come back and win 4-3. And then last night they were down four different times, four different deficits. They came back and get two hat tricks in a playoff game for the first time in their history. Sean Couturier, a 19-year-old rookie, became the second youngest player in NHL history to score a hat trick in a playoff game. So, I mean, things you can't draw on the drawing board. I mean, this is a win. In fact, both wins are wins you could not expect. And the Flyers feel very fortunate to be up 2-0. But give a lot of credit. They've shown a lot of grit. And that said, the Flyers have actually been a better road team this year than they have been at home. Oh. And as you know, the next two games are Philadelphia. So this series is far from over.
Sam, you mentioned Sean Couturier, and he was obviously drafted 8th overall in the 2011 entry draft by the Philadelphia Flyers. Got a hat trick yesterday, got some really beautiful goals. How special was his performance last night, you know, based on the fact that he was matching up directly against Evgeny Malkin, the best player in the National Hockey League this past season?
Yeah, that's the ironic thing. I mean, his job has been to shadow Malkin, and he's done a great job of that, and he's also outscored him now. Malkin was minus four last night, and Couturier, the rookie, was plus four. So, he's a special player, and he's played mostly on the fourth line this year, and people say, well, Flyers are wasting his talent. But you have to remember, I mean, you have to pay your dues and buy your time, and you look at Jordan Staal, who's now a 25-goal scorer for the Penguins, of course, and he came into the league, and he was a fourth-line center, and he paid his dues. And I think you're going to see that with Couturier. He'll move up as the years go on, and eventually he'll probably be a top-line center or at least a second-liner. And he's a 6'4", big body, and he's gotten better and better all year on face-offs. And he's been known for his defense, but he's shown some flashes of offensive ability, and we really saw it last night.
Scoring 6 points last night, Claude Giroux has been a dominant force for the Flyers. But what about the emergence of Braden Schenn?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. Schenn had a breakout to me in game one, and in game two was Couturier. Schenn's only 20 years old. It was, I thought, by far his best game of the year. He had 3 points in game one, goal, and a couple assists, and was very physical. And to me, he has a little bit of Bobby Clark in him. I'm not saying he's going to be another Bobby Clark, but he plays with that tenacity. But he's more physical than Bobby Clark. He's a bigger player than Clark was when he played. This Flyers team has, to me, a perfect blend of rookies, young players. You have rookies like Matt Reed, who'll probably finish in the top two or three in the Rookie of the Year voting. You have guys like Schenn and Couturier and then you have the guys that are young veterans like Giroux, who you mentioned, and Jake Voracek and Wayne Simmonds, and then you have the veterans like Danny Briere and Wayne Simmonds and different guys like that, like Yager. I'm sorry, Jaromír Jágr. So you put it all together, and it's a perfect blend. Things are really clicking right now.
Joined on the line by Sam.
Sorry about that. There's a little bit of noise here. I'm at the skate zone where the Flyers are practicing, and I hope you guys can't hear the noise in the background. There's actually some kind of carnival or something going on here. And can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you perfectly fine. And if there's any pucks sitting around, then we don't mind that either. We're joined on the line by Sam Carcitti of the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can follow Sam on Twitter at Broad Street Bull. Sam, there were huge changes, obviously, this past summer. And you watch the Flyers on TV, at least, and in person a couple of times we've seen them. They seem to be a more cohesive unit than they were last year. Is that the case?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, and that's not to take anything away from Mike Richards or Jeff Carr. They were, very good players. They didn't have the excitement of being at the rink. It was almost like dread. I know there was definitely dread when they were with the media. This team just seems like they have more fun, and they definitely are more cohesive unit. And And they're a lot, you know, on the ice, they're a lot quicker than they were. And I think that was one of the main reasons that Paul Holmgren went out and made the two blockbuster trades. You look at the Flyers lineup now, and, you know, the Flyers for many years were a plotting team, a physical team. They still play with an edge, but, you know, guys like Couture and Wayne Simmonds and Matt Reed and, you know, Giroux, and you go on and on. Eric Wellwood, who's a rookie, and Jake Voracek. This is a very quick team. And, you know, I think they match the Penguins' speed, and you couldn't always say that. The Flyers, you know, may even be a shade quicker. I mean, they have six or seven guys can match up with almost anybody in the league in speed. And, you know, it's a good combination with you know, some of the guys that play with a physical style, like Wayne Simmonds and Zach Rinaldo and guys of, like that.
Sam, the Flyers added Nicholas Grossman right before the trade deadline, and he was recently signed to a contract extension. What are your thoughts on the way he's played in Philly's top four?
Well, he played great until he was injured. He had a knee injury on a collision with Joe Vitale of Pittsburgh in a regular season game, and he missed three games. And in the opener, I thought he looked a little slow, and he's getting used to it. He's playing with two knee braces right now. Wow. I thought he played a little better last night, and he's starting to look like he did when he first got here. He was tremendous. He may have been the Flyers' best defenseman for about a 3 or 4 week stretch. And I don't think it's any coincidence that Ilya Bryzgalov went on a hot streak as soon as they made the trade for Nick Grossman with Dallas. And since then, Bryzgalov has turned his game around. And he's a physical guy, he's a crease clearer. And that's just what the Flyers needed, because this team on the back end was not very physical. And they lost Chris Pronger. Mm-hmm. They were searching for, you know, some edginess, some physical play on the back line, and they got that with Pavel Kabina, and certainly with Nick Grossman. And it's not a stretch to say that he's been the Flyers' top defenseman over the last 5 weeks. And like I said, he did miss three games. He's still trying to get back into a rhythm, and he struggled a little bit in game one, but he seems to be getting back in the flow after game two. And you know, he picked up an assist, was plus two yesterday, had four hits. So, you know, you can see him getting more involved in the game. And I think he has a little bit more mobility on that knee than he had in game one.
This was the talk coming into the series. But after two games, is it fair to say that win or lose, the Flyers are not intimidated by the Penguins?
Oh, yeah, there's no way they're intimidated by the Penguins. But the Flyers won four of six games for the Penguins in the regular season. And really, you know, they won four of the first five when it really meant something. The last game of the year meant nothing. They didn't play Bryzgalov, did not play Claude Giroux. So, you know, they've owned the Penguins at their own arena since Consol Energy Center was built. The Flyers are 7-1 there. So, no, the Flyers are not at all in awe of this Penguins team and Sidney Crosby and Malkin. They feel they have, you know, their own stars, like guys like Claude Giroux and like I said, the budding stars, the guys like Couture and Wayne Simmonds and Matt Reed and guys like that. So, you know, that said, I still think it's not going to be very easy to win four games in a series. I'd be shocked if this Flyers team, you know, won four in a row. A lot of people in Philadelphia are saying, hey, we got the Penguins at home now. We can finish them off. It's not going to be as easy as that.
Sam, why the continuous slow starts? It seems like it just keeps happening and happening. Obviously, they're able to come back, but why do they keep starting off so slow?
You know what? If I had the answer to that, I'd probably be hired by Peter Laviolette to be on his coaching staff, because nobody knows. I mean, the Flyers are aware of it, and you know, Jaromír Jágr says maybe we should just start the game at the 10-minute mark.
Yeah.
You know, tell them to put on the score at 2-0 that we're losing, and you know that's when they start to play. I mean, it just they get down and then all of a sudden they get revved up and they come back. In 9 of the last 14 games, they have trailed 2-0 or greater. So some games it's been 3-0, and 9 of the games it's been at least 2-0, and you know, out of those 9 games, they've actually come back and won 4 of them. When they're trailing either 2-0 or 3-0, they've won 4 of those games, and all 4 were against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It's truly incredible. You know, in terms of Bryzgalov, obviously he's been a lightning rod for criticism this year, but how big was that save last night on Christopher Letang?
It was huge. In fact, after the morning skate today, Wayne Simmonds said he thought it turned the game around, and you know, it's pretty unusual to say that a goalie was, you know, did a good job after giving up five goals. But I thought Prescott was really good last night. He gave up one bad goal. But other than that, you couldn't fault him for four of the goals. And I'll tell you what, the Penguins could have scored eight or nine. He made, I thought, two of his better saves of the year, and the, including the one you mentioned with Letang. And you know, he's still not back to where he was before his injury. He had a fracture in his foot and missed three games. He actually missed four of the last six, but it kind of threw him out of his rhythm a little bit. But you can see that he is starting to get there. He's getting back to where he was in March when he was the best goalie in the NHL. But you know, they're going to need him to play well in the playoffs if they're going to go anywhere. No question about that.
Final question, Sam, before we let you go. You just tweeted about it, but can you give our listeners an update on James Van Riemsdyk's status for the rest of the series?
Yeah, he, you know, he will not play tomorrow, but today was the first day that he skated with the team. And, you know, the next game after tomorrow, game four, will be Wednesday. I would say he's probably doubtful for that game. And, you know, but if this series goes to a game five or game six, would not be surprised if he was available then. Now, whether they're going to play him or not, I don't know. He had a broken foot, and he's missed 6 weeks for people who don't know. And he's been skating on his own for about 5-6 days now. But as I said, today was the first time he practiced with the team. He's playing with a protective shield on the skate. And, you know, he told us he definitely won't be able to play tomorrow, but he's getting close. And that's a good sign for the Flyers. And the thing is now, who do you take out of the lineup? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really clicking. They have great chemistry. I guess Zach Rinaldo will probably be the favorite to come out of the lineup. But you know what? If they keep winning, there's no reason for them to rush him back. Even if he's healthy, there's no change. You know, no reason to take a risk. And I guess it all depends. I mean, if this series is 2-2, you may see him come back for game five. But if the Flyers are up 3-1, say, and there's a game five, then, you know, I don't think there's any reason to rush him back. They could wait until it's absolutely necessary to put him back in there.
Scary to think the Flyers have another bullet waiting there just, once he gets back, just in case they need it, considering they've been putting up an amazing offensive performance up until this point. Sam Carcitti of the Philadelphia Inquirer, thank you very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and enjoy the rest of the series.
My pleasure. You too. Take care.
Good to speak to you, Sam.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
It's Broad Street Bull, by the way, on Twitter. If you want to follow Sam, Broad Street Bull on Twitter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to get into the playoff series. We've been talking about a number of things, whether it be the Philly-Pittsburgh series in depth. We've obviously had our interviews. We're going to talk about these series a little bit more in depth in terms of the New Jersey-Florida series. We're going to break down the Ottawa-New York series. We're going to break down the Washington-Boston series, Phoenix-Chicago. We haven't really even mentioned the St. Louis-San Jose series yet. Much to talk about in the final 45 minutes of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening on TSN 1290. Coming up on 20 after the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. I'm Richard Pollock, sitting in the host chair today for a soon-to-be wed Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is generally, has been in studio, in fact, this entire show. He is on the other side of the glass right now because this segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will have to make in life. Don't leave that decision to an amateur. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty at 230-6129. Excuse me, that's 230-6129. Or follow him on Twitter at David Carr, C-A-R-R, Winnipeg. David, C-A-R-R-W-P-G. And for today, we did it last week, we're doing some promotion here. The first caller to 780-1290 will get a complimentary home evaluation from David Carr. 780-1290, list your house with David, you get a complimentary home evaluation.
I'm tweeting David Carr right now, and he's not responding. I'm wondering if...
People don't always have Twitter open like you do.
Always.
You're always readily available.
I love
on Twitter.
We were talking about this, and you're on the Twitter.
I haven't been on
you've
Twitter.
You've reduced your tweets.
I haven't been on Twitter in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I get the emails from you tweeting out that I'm with you.
Yep.
But I know I'm with you, so I don't need the tweet to tell me that I'm with you.
If you were to open up your Twitter now, you would see, well, I'm with you every night.
That's true.
So I tweet at you every single night, so you would just see.
But why not just talk to me?
That's true.
See what I'm saying there?
There is such thing.
See what
as,
I'm saying?
There is such thing as over-tweeting. Well, but you know, Twitter's awesome. There's always something to talk about, right? That's what I love about it. Whether or not what I'm talking about is you know, relevant or interesting is up for debate.
Interesting to get the perspective of the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh perspectives there. Obviously, one thing you can tell by between both people is, of course, the fact that both Mike and Sam, that being Mike Colligan and Sam Carcitti, yep, don't believe for a second the series is over. And I think, you know, as you heard Sam saying, some fans want it to be a sweep. Pittsburgh's too good, and they have too much talent, and they probably will benefit from playing in a little bit less pressure on the road, and they're down 2-0 now. There's probably just as much pressure on them as Philadelphia, but at the same time, they should be able to handle that, and maybe playing on the road will allow them to shore up their defensive game, and you don't want to be as fancy. But they're in a hole, and you know, you hear the hole, got to win the next 4-5. I don't really look at it that way, but that is the fact of the matter, and you do have to win 4-5. I want to transition quickly to the Jersey series.
Okay.
It's only been one game.
My boys.
Only been one game. And, you know, I think the truth is in this series, is it's New Jersey's to lose. You watched last night. They dominated the first 20 minutes of action. They let Florida seep back into
Did
play.
Did you see what the shots were in the first period?
What was the final shots?
The shots in the first period, and this is a game in Florida. Florida's first home game in, I believe, 12 years. It's 11 or 12 years. One of the two.
Okay.
And the shots were 26-9. Now, we were watching Pittsburgh-Philly a little bit more.
26-9.
And we were watching some of the game, and we had a chance to watch.
Well, because the Devils game started earlier, so you were able
to. The Devils game started earlier, and they were the last series to start. They started yesterday, game one, whereas other series were in game two. And just came out on fire. Patrick Eliash, who has been a playoff performer for years, had a beautiful goal.
Yeah.
And Zubras,
I always
got
remember
the
his breakaway
start.
Goal on Game 7 of the conference finals, I think in 2001 or 2000. I think it was 2000 against Brian Boucher, the year they won the cup.
Yes, yeah. That was the third round.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, he had a good game, and Zubras got the first star. Yeah. And
there's a lot of offensive depth there.
Jose Theodore didn't have a good game.
And this is a good matchup for them. We talked about it last week.
Absolutely.
Because Florida doesn't have the offensive firepower to take advantage of the weak New Jersey defense, Jersey can really run roughshod with that offense. We got Remus back in here. We already got a winner.
Yeah, we already had a winner called in. I think Claude was the winner. Not Giroux, but different Claude.
And not Noel.
Not Noel. So
awesome. Congratulations.
Congratulations, Claude. So talking about New Jersey and Florida, obviously you're listening in the other room. But, I mean, Michael, I think this is a series. I just said, it's just a series for the Devils to lose, really. They're the better team. I don't think anybody doubts it. If they swapped divisions, Florida wouldn't have made the playoffs, and New Jersey would have been the 3 seed.
You know, I watched the first bit of that game, you know, and New Jersey was stepping on the gas right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they shot from everywhere on the ice.
Well, they outshot them, I think, 26-7.
Oh, absolutely. It was totally apparent. I don't think Florida had touched the puck for the first 10 minutes. Theodore was letting a rebound.
Another thing as well is they don't have the goaltending to handle that to Florida.
No, I don't think they have the goaltending or the defense, you know, or can their scoring match up? I think they scored 2 goals to make it close, but really wasn't that close.
Again, and you score when you're down 3-0, so the team's right. Playing more defensive stuff.
Right, and Richie, they don't have any superstars on defense, but you look like a guy like Mark Fain or Bryce Salvador. Yeah. These guys play a lot of minutes, and they're not flashy, but they're big, solid, physical defensemen. And
Volchenkov.
You know they're yeah. Volchenkov too, and they're
Salvador.
they've been good defensively all year. You've got Zajac back. Kovalchuk looks good, even though he didn't really get on the score sheet that much.
You won yesterday.
Yep.
You didn't have Parise score. Yep. You didn't have Kovalchuk score. You're feeling good about your game. You got a road game. You got your road win. Your best players didn't have to score. And if they come in, and they score in game two, and you take it back 2-0 in Jersey, it's a different story here.
Yep. I want to say something too about this series. A lot of people have been saying that, you know, nobody's watching the series or
I don't think
anybody
is watching.
Well, that might be the case, except for me. I'm watching. I don't understand why all of a sudden this series people aren't interested. Florida surprised everyone by not only making the playoffs,
but
winning the division.
Yeah, but
and the New Jersey Devils didn't make the playoffs.
They got in because they're in a weak division, and they're not a playoff team. They're not worth watching.
Okay, but regardless. You don't want to watch every single series?
I mean, no. Jose Theodore is your starting netminder in the playoffs?
Well,
he hasn't been relevant for 5 years.
But I'm saying this is part of the playoffs. I don't understand why people are saying this is unwatchable.
I think the difference is that if they felt like Florida would give New Jersey a real run, it'd be worth it. I haven't seen anybody yet who picked Florida to win the series, and I haven't seen anybody yet who picked the Devils to win in anything more than six games.
Right.
That's why there's no attention to the series. I mean, every other series you see many upset picks. You haven't seen one.
Okay, but those are picks. So I mean that's fine. I mean maybe nobody picked them. But I disagree that it's not watchable.
Well, obviously,
I think it's ridiculous to say any Stanley Cup series is unwatchable.
Well, no. I mean, unwatchable. It's ridiculous. I think when you're ranking it 1 through 8, 1 being the best series to watch.
Sure, maybe it's 8.
It would be 8. You know, let's move to another series, though. And a series that I think people have a lot of attention on. Of course, when you have a New York team involved in the playoffs, especially as a number one seed, they garner a lot of attention. That's the New York Rangers. I thought they handled Ottawa quite handily in the first game.
Got up 4 goals.
Yeah. Two things. A lot of Ottawa struggles were attributed to youth, and I think that's probably very accurate. But I think quickly shooting back to Philadelphia, it's amazing how the youth of Philadelphia reacted in the game one as opposed to Ottawa. But how do you think Ottawa's going to combat New York's tough defensive style and tough forechecking style in the second game, Michael?
You know, I think Ottawa needs to play the game they've been playing all year. You know, they play an up-and-down, fast-paced game. They got a lot of youth and speed on their team, and they need to find a way to New York is trying to neutralize Carlson and, you know, trying to play the body on him. But they need to use their speed to get around it and, I think, get the puck in deep and work it around.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree. You don't want to change your style. And I think Paul McLean's a great coach for that. He's like Mike Babcock. They're not going to change their style. He's going to be offensive-minded. He's going to rush 4 guys. He's going to have defensemen being aggressive. He's going to do a bunch of things that put New York back on their heels. And I think tonight's game will be a better indication of how this series goes. I still think New York wins, but I think Ottawa's reaction tonight will go a long way in saying if this series goes 7, which very well could, or goes 4.
Right, and, you know, Ottawa didn't play that bad. Of course, they got down 4 goals. I don't think that the Rangers are going to lose this series. I think tonight's game is obviously huge. You go down 2-0 to the New York Rangers. It's going to be very tough to stay in the series, even assuming that you do split or take 2 games, pardon me. The Rangers are, like we've said, a well-oiled machine. Marian Gaborik is playing very well. Ryan Callahan looks like he's ready to lead this team as the captain on a nice long playoff run.
Sure does.
Craig Anderson didn't play well. When you factor in all those things, Ottawa's going to have to step up their game a lot tonight.
They're going to. After the break, we're going to talk about one team specifically, St. Louis Blues. You know, Ottawa might lose and go down 2-0 on the road. St. Louis doesn't want to go lose 2 games at home and then have to head out to San Jose. We're going to talk about St. Louis, San Jose. We're going to talk about Phoenix, Chicago. And, of course, we're going to talk about Ovechkin, Chara, Washington, Boston, and the oddest injury you'll ever see, David Krejci.
Oh, that was scary.
Glass falling on him. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
With my brothers here on a Legal Curve.
Unknown brothers.
I know you guys.
30 minutes left.
You're known brothers.
That was Ezra Ginsberg.
Known brothers.
I'm Richard Pollock, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in the studio by Michael Remus and Tim Debenham, producing the show with some great tunes here, a little Black Keys. I'm actually quite excited. I saw the Jazz Fest schedule.
Are they playing Jazz Fest?
Hold Steady's playing Jazz Fest.
Oh, Hold Steady.
One of my favorite bands.
They're a good band.
Well, Black Keys play here next month.
Yep. We're going to that. I'm getting tickets. I don't
Arctic
care.
Arctic Monkeys are opening.
Stepping
right?
up. Timmy's going.
That's Timmy's band. Timmy
we went last
followed
year.
Around a little bit.
We went last year.
Yeah, that's where I went.
Coming back.
I was there, but you guys went together, and then I went.
We bonded. Tim and I bonded.
Our friend Neil. He wanted to be in bed by 9. They didn't even get on until 9:30.
But Neil was still in bed.
Uh-oh. I'm going with Neil to Van Halen. I'm worried now.
Yeah, he was talking about that. How much? You guys didn't pay like $300 for tickets? Like, you guys are sitting basically with David Lee Roth.
I don't want to talk about the price of those tickets.
Hey, at least Sammy Hagar's not involved anymore. That was just brutal.
I like Sammy Hagar, actually.
Ooh,
I'm one of the few. I like a lot of his songs.
Before we have Drew on next segment to talk about Rapid Fire, well, to join in on Rapid Fire and talk about a hot-button topic that has been tweeted at us at length today, which we will discuss, concerning an article posted on the Globe, or a blog post posted on the Globe and Mail. Let's quickly talk about the Phoenix-Chicago series.
Yeah, we disagree that maybe you and Remus and other lots of people, let's be honest, most people, aside from me and my dad, aren't into this series, that being the Devils-Panthers series. This is a series...
That was correct use of me and my dad, by the way. That was right.
Me, you, and everyone we know. Remember that movie? This Chicago-Phoenix series, I thought, was a really good game.
I
think that the Blackhawks really could have stolen Game 1, and I'm expecting them to come back harder in Game 2. Johnny Toews got the goal, and Phoenix...
No Verbata now. So let's put...
Verbata got a mysterious shoulder injury.
They don't expect him to play tonight. That's a big loss. He scored 34 goals this year?
Yeah, he had his career high this year. Richie, I think that the Blackhawks... Can beat. I picked the Blackhawks, but I think the Coyotes are a beatable team. I think the Blackhawks need to start putting a lot more pressure on Mike Smith. Mike Smith's a good goalie, but Mike Smith has played his best hockey because of a system. All you have to do is disrupt that system, start putting more pressure on Phoenix's defense, and we talked about this. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, both agree, is a stud.
Played,
what did he play, including overtime, over 30 minutes.
He skates beautifully, moves the puck well. He's going to be a star.
But aside from Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I mean, the defense, there's holes in the defense, and they can take advantage of that.
Sure. And there's speed holes, because guys like Okoye don't move as well, and Derek Morris, they don't move as well as they once did. And Okoye never moved that well, but Morris did. But, I mean, yeah, they're a veteran defense, for the most part, and the guys like that playing core minutes. But I think the Phoenix team this year, Michael, as opposed to last year, it's a better... They played a structured system last year. I think this year they refined that structure. They've added in even more veterans. And I think that you watch them in Winnipeg and you watch them, and they're not the most exciting team to watch. And I'll admit that. I've said that all year. But it doesn't mean that they don't win. And to beat Phoenix, you have to be patient, and they're going to have to be good on the power play, Chicago. And sometimes I think Chicago forces it a bit, and I don't think Chicago has as many elements to their game as they did a year or two ago.
You know, we talked about Chicago, I think we talked about last night, comparing, you know, how good their Cup team was. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we'll be able to see a team that good for a while. But you look at Chicago, and Jonathan Toews, his first game back from a concussion, scores a goal pretty much right away.
Yep.
And I think it's pretty safe to say that Jonathan Toews is maybe one of the best big game players in the National Hockey League. You know, you saw what he did at the Olympics. Absolutely. You saw what he did in their Cup run. And combine him with Patrick Kane, who, you know, one of my friends was at the Olympics and said Kane was easily USA's best player. Those guys are too skilled not to, you know, put some goals on the board. Combine with Seabrook and Keith and...
I don't think it's a skill issue in Chicago for the most part. I don't think they have the grit that they once did. And I'm full disclosure here. I picked Phoenix in 7.
I do agree with that.
I picked Phoenix in 7. Yep. So full disclosure here, and I'm going to kind of explain the reasons why now. You know, they have the skill. They don't seem to have the grit. I think they have a lot of guys filling parts that they probably don't want, playing roles they probably don't want them to play. And I think there's obviously the big question mark, and that's in goal. And if Mike Smith can outplay... He's going to have to outplay, by the way, Corey Crawford to win the series. But I think that's a very distinct possibility, if not what people are expecting.
See, Richie, I think they're down one game, right?
One game.
And it's very early. And that game,
a home game, too.
And it went to overtime. Exactly. And went to overtime. So this series is going long.
I think Phoenix in 7. I think it's going to be a 7-game series either way.
It's going 7 games. And you're right. They don't have Dustin Byfuglien. They don't have Andrew Ladd. They don't have Adam Burrish. They don't have Troy Brouwer. Those were guys that played very key roles. And I agree with you.
Even last year's team, they don't have Brian Campbell. And say what you will about Campbell's drawbacks.
The defense, yeah.
Odie has been solid there, but he's no Brian Campbell.
Jarmelson, and this was the issue in Game 1, was not on the ice towards the end, and they had Leddy out there with, I believe, O'Donnell, because Oduya is matching up with Jarmelson now, right? Yeah. Am I correct?
Yes. Two Swedes.
Right. So that was the issue, too, with Jarmelson. The thing with Nicholas Jarmelson is, and remember last year, in the first half of the season, he wasn't putting up points.
No.
And, you know, I'm not sure if there's some lingering injury or he's just struggling. He is not getting... He has not earned the confidence of Joel Quenneville. So now when you got rid of Campbell, you thought Jarmelson was going to take the place of Campbell.
Well,
step into...
And Leddy, too.
Leddy. And they haven't had confidence with Leddy because he got the points. He's really young. He's only 20 years old.
I like his game moving forward. But you want to insulate him as a 5 guy right now and then play him in different roles when you can. That's why they brought in Odia, because they didn't think Leddy could handle 4.
Yeah, and he's done all right. He is what he is.
And the
thing is, Richie, I agree with you. This, to me, what I'm banking on is the, you know, the big guns, the Kane, the Taves, the Hossa, the Sharp, and it's not even close. Chicago's way more offensively talented than Phoenix. But there are the holes on defense. And Mike Smith is playing well in goal. So, I mean, you
Chicago special teams, Ezzy. I mean, it's been a question all year.
Yep.
You know, I think you guys are underestimating how much Verbata and his scoring means to the Phoenix lineup.
Absolutely.
I think that leaves a gigantic hole. Yep, I mean, I'm curious who's going to step up. Is they're going to have Lori Korpikoski, Michael Bodker?
I really think a guy like Micah Bodker, exactly you just said. Right. I think he's going to be a key. He's got the skill, and he's shown some flashes down the stretch. But a guy like that with the skill level needs to pick up his pace. And you know the classic cliche, a couple guys need to pick up a couple goals. That's going to need to be the case. But Phoenix is the team to do it if there's any team.
You know, Phoenix to me, especially when we were doing our fantasy draft, I look at their team, I'm like, who's, aside from their top guys, who is going to score? I mean, Hanzel, you know, tipped in the winner the other night. But if they're going to go far, they need emergence from their, you know, their bottom scoring.
You need contributions from defense. You need contributions from many angles. I want to switch over, though.
Okay.
Because that series is more interesting than I think some people give it credit for. St. Louis, San Jose.
Yep. The first game to go to double OT.
Yeah, and you know what? I think every game with St. Louis is going to be a one-goal game. Now watch them win tonight by 3 goals. But this series is as even as it gets as far as I'm concerned. I heard an interview this week with John Davidson, and he was saying, you know, I like our team. Obviously, he's the president of the St. Louis Blues now. And he said, I think San Jose is a good team, and they've been peaking at the right time. So, and I couldn't agree more. I think these teams are as even as you can get. I like San Jose's skill level a little better. That's why I pick them. But this could go either way. And we're in a hockey pool. We reference hockey pools. I picked 3 Sharks. I picked 2 Blues. I mean, I think the Sharks are going to win, but the Blues could very well win.
You know, this series kind of reminds me of the Vancouver-LA series. You know, San Jose's been in that dogfight to make it to the playoffs the whole way.
Good point.
And
St. Louis wasn't playing well down the stretch.
And St. Louis didn't play well. Combined with the fact that the Sharks are there every year, and, you know, they've kind of been there before, and then, you know, the Blues haven't been to the playoffs, they're a young team. You know,
good point.
Definitely, you know, the Sharks were the trendy upset pick going into this series.
I'm not sure how much of an upset it is.
You don't think so?
Not really.
Seeding doesn't matter when you were a team that was expected to win the division.
I don't think seeding matters at all.
Or at all. So San Jose is the 7th seed, but you expected, and San Jose, up until the last game of the season, could have been in the 3rd seed. So then it's not an upset. So, right, seeding doesn't matter. In the first game, you know, St. Louis and San Jose, it was obviously fairly close. And, you know, Marty Havlat, who missed a lot of the second half, gets 2 goals.
He's been clutch back to the 2002 Olympics for the Czechs.
Right, Richie, and we were talking about this before we came on. Today there's going to be changes. Chris Stewart, big acquisition, is a healthy scratch tonight. Matt D'Agostini is in. Ryan Reeves is out, fourth-line tough guy for the Rangers from Winnipeg. He's not going to play.
For the Blues
from Winnipeg. Isn't going to play tonight. So you've got some changes. Ken Hitchcock's going to make changes tonight, and I expect the Blues to come out a lot better and win tonight's game. But this is another series that's going to be a long, hard series. And Halak is in net again. Yeah. And, you know, San Jose is ready to go. All the pressure's off them. They're in the playoffs. They're not the ones that were just competing for, first place in the NHL. So they're a hungry team. They have a lot to prove. Maybe not as much, because St. Louis has to prove that why they're there and why they have to justify how good they did in the regular season. But I think it's going to be I like St. Louis to win tonight with the changes, and you know they'll benefit from those new guys in the lineup. But it's going to be a very tight series, in my opinion.
I think the San Jose Sharks have a lot to prove, and I think that window's closing, and I think they might be seeing that desperation. Now, one win, again, does not a series make. There's much work to do, and they may lose in the first round, and that may be it, and they may be revamped, and who knows. But considering the way the West seems to be breaking right now, guys, maybe Vancouver's out. Who knows what happens to Detroit or Nashville? If they beat St. Louis, what happens?
The Wild West, Richie.
What happens if Phoenix beats Chicago?
The Wild West.
It's conceivable that the West could be San Jose's for the taking. That's how crazy it is. And this is parity. Like it or not, this is parity. It certainly makes it interesting. One segment to go. We're going to be joined by the man, the myth. I'm not so sure he's a legend. But we're going to have him on nonetheless. Drew Mandel, who I'm filling in for today. Not sure if it's ably or not, but I'm trying my best.
I would say you're surpassing expectations, Richie.
The expectations were mighty low. One more segment to go on the Allele Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
final segment. This Saturday afternoon on the Legal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollock filling in the host seat for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Michael Remus. Ezra Ginsberg and producer Tim, we may very well have struck gold, and I think we may. Michael, do we have Drew on the line? Drew, are you there?
I am Drew Mandel.
Oh, Drew, how are you doing?
Phoenix controls their own destiny.
Is this actually Drew, or is this the clips?
The Drew soundboard.
Is this the Drew soundboard, or is this Drew?
I am Drew Mandel.
sounds like Drew to me.
Drew, that sounds like Drew. Hold on.
There you have it.
There you have it. Drew, is that you?
Hi, Drew.
I am Drew Mandel.
Do we get Drew actually on here?
What's going on in Kentucky, right, Drew?
Let's get Drew on here.
That was very humorous. You guys, I'll tell you what, I'm glad to see that the comedy hasn't dulled at all since I'm not there.
Drew, we like your cut laugh better than your actual laugh.
Yeah, I'm surprised you guys, it took you this long to drop the Drew soundboard on the unsuspecting public.
Drew, my man, how is Kentucky going? How are you doing in preparation for your wedding, which is 8 days away?
It's going fabulously well, thank you, Ezzy. Not only that, but... Now you're playing the wedding music. You guys are very funny. You know who I had lunch next to today? Are you guys done?
Keep it going. Yeah. The whole segment, that's going to go in the
background. We'll play it the whole segment.
Yeah. There we go. Keep going, Drew.
You know who I had lunch next to today?
Who?
University of Kentucky coach John Calipari.
Really?
And he told me so many things about the team. I couldn't believe how open he was talking about the team that openly.
All right, we're going to get into this now. There have been tweets at us to discuss it. We are going to quickly discuss it. There was a blog post up on the Globe site by Paul Waldy of the Globe and Mail detailing a fan's encounter with Claude Noel.
Alleged
encounter with Claude Noel. Drew, do you want to take a stab at it before we get into rapid fire?
I'm going to take a stab at it. I think the whole thing, I mean, look, it's hearsay, first and foremost. So, I mean, could it be true? Certainly. Do I think it's true? No, I don't particularly think it's true. It's too bizarre for a head coach to have gone out in public and made these comments just so willy-nilly. I just can't believe that he would be that, not that the comments are that controversial, because, I mean, on our program for months now, we've said the GST line is a fourth line.
Yeah.
It's not an NHL third line. So they're not that controversial. But
maybe somebody at lunch beside us.
I'm sorry?
Maybe somebody at lunch beside us.
Yeah, maybe. Exactly. That could very well be the case. It's just too bizarre that he would be that loose and open with his comments. I don't know. It's something about it that does not ring very true to me. Regarding the whole situation. I mean, sure, I could be wrong. I've been wrong many times before, and I'll be wrong many times again. But to me, the whole thing just sounds, you know, it's not controversial because the comments aren't outrageous, but it's not the least bit. I just have trouble believing it.
I'm going to have to agree with you, Kentucky Drew. I think that there are way too many questions about the integrity of the story. And I'm not talking about Paul Waldy, because we've had him on the show before, and he writes for the Globe and Mail. But I'm not really sure what the angle is here. And when you're using a fan as your only source, and you're not actually talking to Claude Noel, it is absolutely hearsay. And I think it's suspicious, the motives behind it, and why Claude Noel would be talking about his own team at a local restaurant to a fan, knowing that there's a good possibility that fan is going to tell other people about it. Mm-hmm. So I think there's absolutely way too many questions surrounding it. And besides, we're in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The only thing we should be talking about as far as the Jets are concerned is who they're going to take in the upcoming draft in June. You know, what free agents they're going to sign.
Is Sean Couturier available?
Unfortunately not. He's busy scoring hat tricks for Philly.
Oh, too bad. That would have been a good selection.
Absolutely.
You know, and well, quickly, I'll just get in on this. We spent obviously much time at the MTS Center, and Paul Waldy wrote the article. We developed a relationship with him, and the article is he said better. We'll put it that way.
Yep.
And I want to move on, Drew. As much as I want to talk about your lunch plans with John Calipari,
Anthony Davis's eyebrows—they're painted on. I had no idea about that till lunch today.
Really? What did you order at lunch, Drew?
A sandwich. You know, that's how I get. That's how I roll.
True. It doesn't sound like you have much to do. Doesn't sound like you have much to do. So, do you mind joining us for rapid fire?
Oh, I'd be honored to join you for rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
Well, the first question we had was what Drew had for lunch. You know what, Ezzy? What do you think you had for lunch?
Sandwich. I'm going to go with tuna on rye with a bowl of soup and a Diet Coke.
I'm going to guess Greek omelet.
Drew, you already said sandwich.
Drew, I'm going to put two and two. Drew, what'd you have?
Let's be honest. I had a tuna sandwich and a Greek omelet. That's how I roll.
First serious question. Came out this week that Claude Giroux actually has the NHL shop's highest-selling jersey. Drew, we'll start with you. You surprised?
Yeah, I am surprised. I mean, I would have thought it would have been somebody. I mean, I think Claude Giroux is one of probably the top five player in the NHL.
Yep.
But I would have thought it would have been one of the flashier guys. I mean, I still would have thought it would have been Crosby. He's still the face of the NHL, even though he's only played 20, 25 games in the last year and a half or so.
Drew, your phone's acting up. Ezzy?
Yeah, Drew, hopefully you can get into a little bit of a better reception area because you were breaking up a little bit there. Yeah, I'd have to say, Richie, that I'm a little bit surprised. You expect the big guys, the Crosbys, the Ovechkins, maybe the Taves. But you know what? Claude Giroux's proving that, he doesn't take a backseat to anybody. I mean, I still say Crosby's the best player in the NHL, hands down. Yeah. But, Claude Giroux is in that discussion for best players in the NHL. But, Philadelphia has a base. A lot of people are rocking those number 28 jerseys around Philly. So, in that sense, maybe it's not that surprising.
Remus?
I don't have a disagreement with you at all.
But you know what I think? I think it is a bit of a surprise. But it's a surprise that Giroux is not, one of the high-profile guys like a Crosby or Ovechkin.
Right.
But he is a top scorer in the NHL. So, in that case, I guess it really isn't surprising.
It could easily be an MVP candidate this year with Malkin and Lundqvist.
I guess it shows that NHL fans have the most knowledgeable fans.
Good point. Thoughts, Drew, we'll start with you again here. Mike Babcock went off to, people wouldn't be familiar with, Brian Engblom from National Broadcast in the States as well as NHL Jets. He was interviewing Mike Babcock during the first game involving the Red Wings in Nashville, two of the least penalized teams in the National Hockey League, and there had been something like seven or eight penalties called. He made comments to suggest that the officials were basically calling penalties to move themselves up to the Stanley Cup final. Were you surprised by that, and were you surprised that nothing really came of it?
I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that he was honest. I mean, usually those in-game interviews are uninformative at best. So I was surprised he gave a strong opinion. You know what I chalk it up to? I chalk it up to the start of the playoffs. Everybody's a little bit nervous. I think that goes for officials as well. So that's why I think they called a few more penalties. And I think they settled down, I think, last game. And the officiating, I hope, will improve as the playoffs keep going.
Ezzy?
Yeah, I like that Mike Babcock isn't gun-shy, and I have absolutely no problem with the comments. I think the officiating has been suspect, and I think, like anything, the coaching, the play of the players themselves, you can criticize and analyze, and we do that, right now. But the officiating hasn't been bad. I mean, Danny Briere was offside in the first game, so I have absolutely no problem with a coach saying that maybe an official has ulterior motives or whatever. No problem with it.
There you have it.
Remus?
Just go to the next one.
Okay. Last one here before cheers and jeers. Drew, will once again start with you. We're ready to see you, by the way, next week. We can't wait to get down there.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Joffrey Lupo. This is a great one. I love this one. Joffrey Lupo was booed at a recent Blue Jays game when showed on the Jumbotron. Drew, your thoughts? And are Leafs fans maybe finally fighting back in the way that New York fans do?
I don't think that Leafs fans necessarily are, because I don't think the average Leaf fan gets to go to a hockey game. So, I mean, that's great that he got booed at the Rogers Center at the Jays game. I don't think that they should take their pressure. I think on the list of players to blame, I don't think Joffrey Lupo is high up on that list.
Yeah.
Typical Toronto management, though. If they had shown their faces in public, they would have been booed too, but they decided to hide up in their boardroom somewhere.
Remus?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you got to boo someone to take all your frustrations. He was there. He was an easy target. I mean, you're there to watch the Blue Jays, not to watch some terrible hockey team. So, it's kind of funny, I guess, but I kind of feel bad for Lupo. He had a good season.
Has he?
I agree. He had a great season. I'm not sure why Joffrey Lupo is being booed. He gave the Toronto Maple Leafs 100% when he was healthy in the lineup, and he was one of their best offensive players. Obviously, second to Kessel. So I don't understand the booing of your own players.
Cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Drew, did you come prepared today?
I'm always prepared, Richard. I'm a professional here.
Do you have a cheer or a jeer?
I'm going to jeer. I just think that I like Paul Waldy very much, and I think he's a very nice guy, but I think that article was a little bit thin gruel, and I'm not sure it should have ever seen the light of day. I'm certainly no journalism expert, as you carry that banner amongst us. But from what I understand, you have to get things, sourced by more than one source.
Absolutely.
And, next time we need a story planted, we're sending Remus out to have lunch next to a journalist.
Remus.
I'm going to cheer Martin Hanzel, scored the OT winner, for Phoenix in their win against Chicago. And in the post-game interview, he said it was the first overtime goal he had ever scored. So good for him.
Cue the Hanzel jokes.
Always a thrill showing your, whatever. Always a thrill scoring an overtime goal.
Ezra.
I'm cheering Claude Giroux. 3 goals, 6 points, sets the Philadelphia Flyers record for most points in a playoff game. That was an unbelievable hockey performance. Probably one of the top five ever individual performances I've ever seen in a game. And that's good for the sport and good for hockey. And, he's elevated his game, even though it was already at a really high level. And, he just looks like... He looked like the best player on the ice. He played like it. I'm going to cheer Giroux.
So hot right now.
It's no fluke, because if you watch him play in Winnipeg and you watch him play throughout the year in person, you can see that he is just a dynamic player. He not only is a great player, but he makes other players around him better, which not all great players do. My cheer this week, I'm going to do a cheer rather than a jeer. My cheer this week goes to Peter Laviolette. I like the fact that he shows emotion behind the bench. I feel like many coaches these days are all obsessed with not showing emotion. And I've mentioned this before on the show a while back. I like that he gets into the games. I like that he celebrates after an overtime win. I like that he gets angry and yells at the other team. You don't need to be stoic all the time. You can still have personality and be effective. And I think Pierre Laviolette has shown that you can have personality and be effective. And that's not a shot at a guy like Dan Bylsma, not a shot at a guy like Claude Noel. Just makes it more interesting. I harken back to guys like Pat Burns. And say what you will about Tortorella, at least there is an emotion there, and he seems like a real person, and I do like that, and it makes it a little bit more humanizing, and I appreciate that as a fan, because you like to get to know people and teams and players and identities, and I feel like in the age of Twitter, you get to know short facts, you don't get to know people, and so if they don't show your emotions on the bench, you never get to see them, so at least you get to see a little bit more of an authentic piece.
That's a good cheer, Richie. Peter Laviolette's like Cheese Whiz. He's got personality.
Well, Drew, that does it. We're going to head down Tuesday evening.
There was a ton of hockey on TV here down in the States now. Every game is being shown on a different station on the NBC family. So it's either on the NBC Sports Network or CNBC or wherever else. There's a lot of hockey on, so you won't be deprived when you come down.
Well, I can't wait. We can't wait to hit some baseball games, and we're actually going to be in St. Louis for the Game 4 of the St. Louis-San Jose series, so that should be a blast. And be well, Drew, and we'll see you soon.
We'll see you boys soon. Drive safe. Remus, take care of the place next week in our absence.
Next week, Michael Remus.
Drew, see you next Sunday. Make sure that they stock up that open bar. We're going to be there in less than a week, so make sure they're all stocked up and ready to go.
Ezzy, your invitation is in the mail.
I can't wait, Drew. Don't worry, I didn't buy you a present. For Michael Remus, who's going to be filling in ably next week with Dave Manuk and Darren Bombing. Dave Manuk, of course, of IllegalCurve.com. Be sure to check out IllegalCurve.com for all your latest Jets news. Some interesting articles this morning in the morning papers. For Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim, for, as you just heard, Drew Mindell, I'm Richard Pollack. I'm going to miss being in any chair in the studio next week, but I'm sure the boys will do a great job. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Enjoy your Saturday, the rest of your Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening. If it's Saturday, as Drew would say, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.